This video is made possible by Made In. Get 15% off your first order for any cookware you want by following the link down in the description. This is a map of the world, and you'll notice by looking at it long enough that it's completely full of countries. Today, there's at least 195 countries that exist in the world, and at face value, it seems like there isn't anywhere to go besides the world's oceans if you want to get away from all of them. But that isn't really true. If you zoom in close enough and over to the right areas, you'll see that about 1% of Earth's land area remains unclaimed by any country, entity, or person, and theoretically, this 1% of Earth's land is a lawless, uninhabited, and wild zone outside of the control of humanity. For all intents and purposes, these lands are basically on the same legal footing as the surface of the moon. And yet, there are actual places right here that you can go and visit right now. However, most of all this unclaimed land is located right here in Antarctica. It's called Mary Birdland, and while it's about the same size as Mongolia, basically just a frozen wasteland right now like the rest of Antarctica, and, well, that's the gist of why nobody has ever bothered enough to claim it. Over 99% of Earth's unclaimed land is all right here, which is kind of boring because visiting it is difficult. Nobody lives anywhere close to it, and Antarctica wasn't even discovered until 200 years ago, so it all kind of makes sense why nobody would have ever bothered here. The other unclaimed lands, on the other hand, are much more interesting, because despite being a lot smaller in area, one is located on the continent where humanity began in the first place. Which is odd, because you'd figure somebody would have gotten around to it already. It's located right here in Africa, and it's called Bir Tawil. Despite being sandwiched in between Egypt in the north with a population of 100 million people and Sudan in the south with a population of 43 million people, neither government claims Bir Tawil, and neither does any other country, person, or entity on the planet. Not a single person lives here, and it's about the size of Luxembourg in Europe. Because nobody lives here, there aren't any roads, towns, or any development whatsoever. It's literally just an empty Luxembourg-sized plot of land in the middle of the Sahara Desert, full of absolutely nothing but sand and rocks. Since there isn't any government and there aren't any laws, it means that you can basically just show up here and then do whatever you want, including attempting to create your own country. And many have already tried that. In 2014, an American dad from Virginia showed up and claimed to have established the Kingdom of North Sudan in Bir Tawil with a flag that was designed by his kids. A few months later after that, a couple Russian guys showed up, planted a Russian flag, and claimed to have established the creatively named Kingdom of Middle Earth. And then in 2017, an Indian guy showed up and claimed to have established the Kingdom of Dixit after his last name and planted his own flag. All three of these guys' claims to Bir Tawil overlap with one another, and there's been some great Twitter squabbling between them in the past. And I plan on joining them in the future by claiming Bir Tawil as the Kingdom of Real Life Lore, or the KRLL for short. Of course, I have never visited Bir Tawil, but that hasn't stopped dozens of people from claiming it before in the past, and it doesn't stop you from claiming it yourself down in the comments either with your own clever name. The point being is that anybody can claim Bir Tawil for themselves, but actually enforcing those claims is rather difficult because A, it's an empty plot of desert in the middle of the Sahara and there aren't any roads leading to it from anywhere else, so getting there is quite challenging. B, it's a hostile desert in the middle of the Sahara with no infrastructure or development, and therefore living there is almost impossible. And C, in order to be a recognized country, you actually need a permanent population and infrastructure like airports or roads to get that permanent population there, which is hard if you don't have any resources. Maybe after Jeff Bezos conquers space, he'll come after Bir Tawil and turn it into his own personal little kingdom. But how is this even possible in the first place? Why does this relatively large chunk of unclaimed land on humanity's original starting continent even exist? Well, for that, as with all things, we can thank the British and go back a couple hundred years to see why. In the early 19th century, Egypt was theoretically a vassal of the Ottoman Empire, but they were pretty much just completely autonomous and doing their own thing. Like invading and conquering Sudan without necessarily getting any approval from the Ottomans in Constantinople. The Egyptians conquered and then ruled Sudan themselves for decades, and not exactly being fans of this occupation, the local Sudanese started a rebellion against them in the 1870s. By that point, the Suez Canal had already been built in Egypt, and that gave the British Empire a huge transportation shortcut between their possession of India and the British Isles themselves, and British interests in Egypt were growing bigger and bigger with every passing day. Eventually, by 1882, the British were worried that Egypt was falling out of their sphere of influence and determined to hold on to the Suez Canal at all costs and by any means. The British invaded and transformed Egypt into a virtual British protectorate. But by doing this, the British had also just thrust themselves into the rebellion that was going on in Sudan against the long-standing Egyptian rule. Because Egyptian rule now also meant British rule. But what was supposed to just be a quick and easy adventure to shut down the rebellion in the Sudan turned into an 18-year-long quagmire for both the British and the Egyptians. Sudan was completely overrun by the rebel forces and remained that way for 18 years until 1898. When it took a combined British and Egyptian army equipped with modern machine guns and artillery to reconquer it. Afterwards, Egypt remained effectively a British protectorate while Sudan was transformed into something called a condominium. Basically just a colony, but it was jointly ruled by both the Egyptians and the British. However, it really all just basically meant that Britain now controlled both countries, since Egypt co-ruled Sudan, but they were also just a protectorate of Britain at the same time. And so, the British decided that they needed to draw a border to finally settle where Egypt ended and Sudan began. The problem with that was, like with every other border the British came up with on foreign continents and between foreign peoples, was that A, they didn't have satellites, and B, they didn't really understand or care what they were actually doing. The year after the British and Egyptians reconquered Sudan, they came up with this political boundary between the two colonies: a straight line across the 22nd parallel of latitude. However, this line sucked because it was arbitrarily drawn by some guy in London thousands of miles away, and it cut directly through land that nomadic tribes used on both sides, and it was thought that the tribe who used this area was more culturally Egyptian, while the tribe who used this area was more culturally Sudanese. So, in a very rare instance of the British Empire realizing that their initial border didn't exactly make very much sense, they came up with a revised zigzaggy administrative boundary in 1902 that was separate from the political border that was drawn up 3 years earlier, which gave this familiar beer-to-wheel area to Egypt and this bigger area called the Halaib Triangle over to Sudan. Now, for decades, this never really mattered very much because Egypt and Sudan were both effectively ruled by the British anyway. But that began to change by the mid-20th century. Specifically by 1956, the global attitude toward colonialism had greatly shifted and the British left Egypt and Sudan to themselves. Both were now freshly independent nations, and both of them had to choose between two different choices for what their border could legally be. For Egypt, option A was the 1899 line, which gave them Halaib and gave Sudan Bir Tawil, while option B was the 1902 line, which gave them Bir Tawil and gave Sudan Halaib. Meanwhile, for Sudan, their choices were just the reverse of these. Option A was the 1899 line, which gave them Bir Tawil and gave Egypt Halaib, while option B was the 1902 line, which gave them Halaib and gave Egypt Bir Tawil. In effect, both Sudan and Egypt were forced into a rather unique legal situation where they had to choose between either Halaib or Bir Tawil, but absolutely not both. It could only be one, and naturally, just by looking at the map, you can understand why both of them wanted to choose Halaib. It's about 10 times more land than Bir Tawil. There were actually about 1,000 or so people who lived there, compared with Bir Tawil's nobody, and most importantly, Halaib has a nice coastline along the Red Sea, while Bir Tawil is completely landlocked. Halaib is indisputably the more valuable piece of land, and as a result, Egypt insisted that the true border was the 1899 straight line, while Sudan insisted that the true border was the 1902 wiggly line. For decades, Sudan and Egypt both just shared Halaib and kind of administered it together, sort of like a condominium. This status quo never really became a big issue until 1992, though, when the worst possible thing for the region's geopolitics could have happened. You guessed it, oil was discovered in the territorial waters in the Red Sea directly next to Halaib. So, whoever controlled Halaib would also control these potential oil reserves. And neither Sudan or Egypt were particularly in the mood to share. Sudan tried to jump ahead of Egypt by granting exploration rights to a Canadian petroleum company. Egypt declared that that was illegal, and then using the 1899 border as a pretext, they moved in troops to occupy Halaib. Sudan retaliated to this by allegedly attempting to assassinate Egypt's then-president in 1996 while he was out visiting Ethiopia, and Egypt retaliated to that by kicking out all Sudanese police and officials from Halaib. In 2000, with tensions at an all-time high, Sudan decided to withdraw all of their officials from the Halaib area, and it's been de facto controlled by Egypt ever since. Although Sudan continues to claim it and shows it marked as being a part of Sudan on all official Sudanese maps. Egypt has since tried to strengthen their claim on the land by investing more than $60 million into infrastructure development projects, and just a couple years ago in 2019, they also attempted to sell oil and gas exploration rights in the waters off Halaib in the Red Sea, to which Sudan made a bunch of legal threats about. So, yeah, that's why Bir Tawil exists as a lawless no-man's zone in between them. If either Sudan or Egypt moved in to occupy Bir Tawil, it would immediately mean forfeiting their claim to the much more valuable Halaib Triangle, and neither side has ever been willing to make that sacrifice for more than 65 years now. And no other country could really bother claiming it either because, well, like I said earlier, it's a tiny, undeveloped, unpopulated, and landlocked plot of empty desert full of nothing but sand and rocks in the middle of two other countries. But if you're still determined to travel to Bir Tawil anyway and claim your own country here, you're going to need a few things like roads and airports for transportation, along with farms and restaurants to feed your population. In order to attract that population with your restaurants, you need to actually be able to create some delicious food so people will actually want to come. And in order to do that, you need to actually have some good cooking equipment. And the best place to get some of that is over at Made In. Look, I really used to hate cooking because prepping and cleaning my tools was tedious and annoying while the food I made wasn't really as good as what I could just get at a restaurant. But eventually, I got more serious about my cooking and I invested in a collection of professional quality cookware from Made In, like this stainless steel frying pan, and it's completely made all the difference. When I put it on my stovetop, it retains a superbly even heat distribution that translates into beautifully even golden browning on all of my meats. The handle is perfectly designed to stay cool even when on a stovetop, so I can easily pick it up when I need to and place it in the oven. And it's incredibly easy and fast to clean it all up when I'm done. This one pan has over 10,000 five-star reviews by other people on their website, so I really seriously can't recommend it enough. But besides this pan, Made In has tons of other kitchenware and cookware for everything you need, ranging from knives, pots, bakeware, plates, and more, and they're all sourced from the finest materials from world-renowned craftsmen, and all without any markup. So rather than buying a cheap $20 pan from Walmart that you're gonna end up having to replace every year, you should invest in one instead that's made for life and backed by a lifetime guarantee, and it'll also just make your cooking so much more enjoyable, fast, and good. Their products have over 37,000 five-star reviews for a reason, and they're used by some of the best chefs at Michelin-starred restaurants across the world. So if you're serious about investing in your own kitchen, now is definitely the best time, because Made In is offering you 15% off of your first order when you click the button on screen now and use the code RLL at checkout, which is the best discount they're offering anywhere. You can also click the link in the description or visit madeincookware.com/RLL and use the promo code RLL for 15% off of your first order. It's a great way to help out real life lore and get some awesome cookware at the same time. So once again, visit madeincookware.com/RLL, use promo code RLL, and thank you for watching.